Hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Canadian Bowler. We are live, episode 53, I think, Daryl. Welcome to this glorious Father's Day Sunday. Happy Father's Day to you, Daryl. How are you doing today?
Happy Father's Day. Doing really well. Really tired from streaming a long time yesterday, but I was really looking forward to the show and talking about a lot of results.
Yeah, no, I was watching there yesterday, and it looked like you had quite a long day, as you're saying, but it looked like it turned out pretty well. Like the quality was there, and I enjoyed watching the games because it's a terrific format that they have there. So I think you've given me some background on how the lunch was spectacular as well. So we'll cover those results a little bit later, I guess. Hey,
yeah, we can talk about it a little later, but lots of stuff has happened over the last couple of weeks, and the weather's turning nice. Greens are opening. Provinces are doing their thing. We've got just tons of stuff going on in the world of bowls, really.
Yeah, I guess before we really dive into all that, just a quick reminder as we start out the show to like, comment, subscribe here today. So if you are watching the show, any sort of comments, we love to interact with you. And if you can hit that like button, helps us out a lot to get up in those algorithms for people to watch on YouTube. If you're not able to check it out live, as I said, we are on YouTube. Usually within about the day, you'll be able to see the video there. And then we all are also on any major podcasting platforms. So usually within a week, our show is also available on podcast platforms. So however you want to check us out, whenever you want to check us out, you can definitely find us online there.
Well said.
So as you've alluded to so far, Daryl, I think we have quite a bit of provincial results because it's really starting to get into that season here in Canada.
It is. Just crazy amount of stuff that gets jam-packed into a few months leading up until the Canadians in August. So provinces are frantically trying to get their playdowns in, and every province does it slightly differently, and some are a little earlier, some are a little later, but generally our next few shows are going to be just jam-packed with provincial results, I think.
Yeah, like me personally, I took part in our provincial championships last weekend, and they're going on this weekend right now. Like, we do fours was the first weekend last week, and then jumped right into pairs this week. So I know other provinces, I think it's Manitoba's running theirs right now, and I think Alberta's got singles this weekend. So pretty much every province has got something going. I think BC joins in maybe next week or the week after, so pretty much every province is going to have some results for us to cover here in the next little while.
That's right. I can kick it off. We've got some Ontario results. Some great stuff. The Ontario Fours Championship happened just the weekend prior to this, and the results were Vince Donahoe won gold with his team of Glenn Patton, Mark McFadden, and Gary Butino. Young Eric Gallipo will go to his first nationals as skip. And he skipped the team to the silver medal. Martin Foxhall, Rob Gallipo, his dad, which is kind of cool too, and David Llewellyn. He's got some experience mixed in with some debuts at the Canadians, so that's kind of neat. And the bronze went to Derek Mackay. He's actually the reigning, I think from 2019, the reigning gold medalist for the Canadians. So he didn't quite make it, though, with his team of Lyle Mix, Murray Benoise, and Eric Zwyers. They got bronze. On the women's side, the gold went to the team of Catherine Smith, with Valerie McWilliams, Cheryl McBain, and Patricia Kostecki. Silver went to Cindy Higgins, with Lynn Cranch, Betty Robitaille, and Sarah O'Shea for the silver medal. And the bronze went to the team of Laura Seed, Sue Roth, Gloria Chung, and Sandy McKenzie.
Congratulations, all them. That's exciting results. Some very noticeable names on the men's side there. Some guys that I think I've came across. Well, Eric, obviously, and junior U25 type of competitions over the years and current national team member. And then the members of his team, I've probably played a few times at nationals, however they were formatted as four teams in the past. So it'll be nice to see that they're on their way there. I guess if I'm going to let the cat out of the bag, I have Saskatchewan results. So I ended up winning the provincial fours last weekend for Saskatchewan.
Woohoo, Mike! Yeah.
So my team was skipped by my brother, Jonathan Petulli. I was vice, Michael Petulli. And then we had Grant Wilkie at second. And then on 3 days' notice, my father stepped in, Murray Petulli. So that was our men's fours team. Same one that we, I guess, went to nationals 2018, 2011. We've been twice together. So had some decent results. I think got a gold and a silver medal at nationals. So hopefully we can keep playing like we were even 10 years ago, I guess. So it shows how old we're getting. On the women's side, the women's winners for Saskatchewan were Jean Roney, the skip, with Jordan Koss as the vice. Heather Hanoski is their second, and Tracy McPherson is their lead. So congrats to them as well. They'll be heading to Burlington. So a solid Saskatchewan women's team. Jean's always a formidable skip to play against. And when you have Jordan, who's probably one of the major members of the national team at this point, they're going to be a tough team to beat as well.
Absolutely.
So congrats to them. Actually sort of shaping up to be a kind of a younger field for the men's fours when I took a look at it, because you got our team who's got some younger people. If you got Eric, who's definitely one of the younger skips. If we're me looking at other provinces websites to get results, we do have Lawn Bowls Nova Scotia has some results up there. So throwing a bit of curveball to you here, Daryl, but I'll quickly cover that one.
yeah, no problem.
So the men's fours team is another young team, Braden Campbell with Ray McDonald, John Seitman, and Liam Campbell. Their fours team is a pretty young team as well. They also have for men's pairs, Steve Ogden and Steve Bazanson. So the old guard, the guys who've probably been to about 40 nationals between the two of them.
Not so young team, yeah.
Yeah, they're going back for another run. Then for the women's, we have Tammy Foster with Jackie Foster, Debbie Foster, and Lorraine Bazanson. So again, that team I think has been to nationals many times in the fours together.
Yeah.
For women's pairs, we have Debbie Tower and Nancy Latimer. So congrats to all of them. That'll be great to see all of them at nationals in 2 months from now, I guess, roughly, we'll be starting that out. So congrats to everybody. I guess the other one that we wanted to talk about is, I think Alberta started their singles. Yeah, so it's Alberta started their singles, looks like yesterday. So did quite a few entries for the men and still a solid amount of women too. So they're midway through. I think they split off to the final eight for the men today. So we had, if I'm going to cover who's playing, Jesse Wilkinson is playing Greg Wilson. So that'd be a good game this morning. Brad Roden is playing Roy Riege. Then we got John McDonald against Mike O'Reilly. And then friend of the show, Derek Dillon versus Pat Bird. So kind of the who's who of the Alberta Bulls scene playing each other this morning to try and get some of those spots at the single nationals.
I can jump in for the women's side. So the women have because there's fewer women playing, they have a slightly different format. They're doing a round robin, and then what'll happen is the top two will play for gold and silver, and then the third and fourth will play for bronze. So as it stands right now, and there's still one more game to play, Bev Robinson is leading the pack with 12 points. Jan Robinson is next with 9 points, tied with Joanna Cooper for 9 points. And Shannon Roden is in there with 6 points. Then we have Claire Day with 3 and June G with 0. This next game could probably shake out, not likely shake Bev Robinson out of the gold, but possibly shake people into silver and bronze contention, which will be probably kind of neat. And they may even have to go down to points for and against if the points are all tied. So that could be kind of interesting. Yeah. So if provinces have their results, send them to us. Like we've said in the past, provincial websites are not that good. And, you know, posting stuff on a timely manner, we grab our stuff where we can, and from Facebook and social media, and people just kind of telling us who won or telling us what's going on. So yeah, send it our way, CanadianLawnBowler@gmail.com, and we'll get it, and we'll talk about it for sure.
Yeah, definitely. We're more than happy to cover any province, because once we do have the full results and the field set up, like I've told Daryl, and I'll tell the world, we're going to probably do a preview video for Nationals this year, talking about who's going and maybe make some bold predictions about how we think it's going to shape up. So sort of something we have going to be coming up once we have the full results, and I'm excited to do something like that, because I've kind of been in the background for the last about 10 years with Alex Scott and myself. We've always sent each other our little previews and lists, so we're just going to make it public this time, where the two of us will actually go into details and sort of make some predictions. So I think that'll be a fun little video that we'll hopefully be having out within the next month and a bit, because I think some provinces usually aren't done their provincials till kind of mid-July, so we'll hopefully have it out shortly after that.
And I will say, it's nice to actually have a bowler on the Canadian Bowler. I'm not bowling much. I'm coaching a lot. I do bowl a little bit. Luke hasn't been bowling that much this year or the last couple of years, but at least we've got Michael Petulli representing the bowler side, you know, winning, going to Nationals. He's bowling. So there is truth behind Canadian Bowler.
Say we can't call ourselves the Canadian Coacher or something like that. So we got to have at least one of us bowling or doing something. So that's glad, right? I can at least fill that role for us. So we talked about it earlier in the show. I guess pretty big day for you yesterday. So Phoenix Bowls Championship had their opening event for the year. So how was that, Daryl?
That was fantastic. It's a really cool format, fast paced. It's three bowl pairs, five ends, so you don't have a lot of time to make up ground. The games are constantly going on. If you watch the stream, it lasted for, what was that, like 7-8 hours, and then I did the finals, which was another probably half hour to an hour of streaming. So lots of games, lots of stuff. Go check it out on our Facebook channel. I will be editing and chopping it up and putting up individual games onto our YouTube channel. So for those interested in their own games, for interested in just seeing a few of the games, they're really short. So just go and check those out. We were streaming Rink 2. It was probably the trickiest rink on the green, which always makes for fun times. So the heads weren't always that great. The shots weren't always able to be made, and you could see some frustrated people playing. But the event was great, well run, ran like clockwork. The lunch was probably the best lunch I've ever had at an event. So kudos to the sponsors that they had for providing that. It was fantastic. I can't say enough about that. Rob Gallipo in the chat, spearheading this along with his family. He had his wife, his daughter, and Eric was there as well playing. But him, along with the volunteers at the club, just made it a really top-notch event. And the Phoenix is really a really cool event. So the way it went down was the semifinals ended up being Jim and Sue Roth versus Vince Donahoe and Glenn Patton. And then on the other side, we had Cody Olthoff versus Sandy McKenzie, and Sandy McKenzie versus Steve McCarron and Mark Sanford. So those events went on. We streamed the Roth and Donahoe match on green 4, I want to say. And then the final ended up being Vince Donahoe and Glenn Patton versus Cody Olthoff and Sandy McKenzie. And then that came down to the final couple ends, and Vince and Glenn took home the big money and the entry into the grand final, which will be at Heritage in September. And just fantastic event. For those that want a really fun, cool day of bowls, go check it out, www.phoenixbowls.com. Register for the event. Go out and have a good time. It's a pairs game. They're short, they're quick, they're fun. People there are fantastic. So check that out. Try to get yourself into the grand final. And like I've said in the past, for provinces that are looking for something new and unique to do, look at this event. Check it out. Make sure that if you're really looking for something really cool, reach out to Rob. Go to the website and reach out to Phoenix Bowls. Get the format. And, you know, if in the future we could grow this to something like you have a Phoenix event in every province and then you have a grand final in one of the provinces at a great club, it could be a really cool big event for Canada.
Yeah, no, definitely. I see the growth potential there for Phoenix as a whole. So that's exciting to sort of dream about or think about. I know qualified for nationals now, I'm very much contemplating jumping in on the second event that they're having right before nationals. So if you are going to be heading to nationals, playing in nationals, I believe it's the Saturday before nationals starts. So if you're wanting to give it a shot, there's really no better opportunity than that day, essentially before you're going to start doing any practicing or anything before the games start at nationals. So I'm very likely going to enter personally. I just need to kind of find myself a partner or something someone to play with me. So that's kind of where we're working on it. And yeah, I'm excited for it. It was good to watch it yesterday.
Yeah, and Rob in the chat just mentioning Haven on the Queue, who is a big sponsor for them. They're a charitable organization that gives out food to those in need, helps the community in huge, huge ways through like food bank kind of stuff and other programs. They provided the lunch, and they actually provided the guaranteed $1,000 to the top team, which is a pretty good prize pool. And you also get the entry into the grand final, which is kind of neat too. So yeah, just awesomely run all around.
Cam also in the chat there. So friend of the show, Cam, friend in the chat telling us we missed the senior results from Nova Scotia. So senior triples, Joyce Anderson, Charmaine Cameron, and Mayumi Endo. And he says there's no male team. When I also looked, I realized there was a singles playdown that had been completed from Nova Scotia as well. I didn't read them. I probably am going to save that for a later time, but sorry, Cam, that I lost over some of your guys' results. It's coming in dear time. I'm probably going to try and do all the singles at once or something like that. But yes, there was other results from Nova Scotia. So thanks, Cam, making sure we're on top of things.
El Presidente, Cam, coming in for his province. So he's doing his job. That's good to see.
Yeah. President Dr. Pepper's doing a good job there, making sure that we're on top of things. I guess if we're speaking about him, we might as well cover our next topic. Pretty big news for that guy.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. So you want to introduce it?
No, you are going. You're going. Give it, Daryl.
So the Commonwealth Games team was announced. I got the sneak peek because I was a selector. So I can run through who's playing and where. So the men's team, representing Canada at the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham, will be Ryan Bester, John Bazier, Cam Lafrain, who's in the chat. Give him a round of applause. Rob Law and Greg Wilson. So we'll have Ryan playing singles. We'll have Ryan and John Bazier playing pairs. Cameron, Rob, and Greg will be playing triples together. And then John Bazier, Cameron, Rob, and Greg will be playing fours together. That's kind of the makeup of the teams there. On the women's side, we have Kelly McCarahan, Leanne Chinnery, Jordan Koss, Jackie Foster, and Jen McDonald. For this one, it'll be Jordan and Jen's first time at the Commonwealth Games, which is really kind of cool. Kelly will be playing triples and fours. Leanne will be playing triples and fours. Jen McDonald will be playing triples and fours. And then we'll have Jackie and Jordan teaming up for the pairs. Jackie will also be hopping into the fours as well. And then Jordan will be playing singles at the Commonwealth Games. So a cool little shakeup there with the women's team as well. So congratulations to all those players. I think it's a great team. We have some really strong representation, and now they're all just putting in the, as Terry would say it, our national coach, the hard yards to get ready for Commonwealth Games. It's coming up really quick. All the information is starting to fly into the email boxes, and booking flights and getting bowls, because we need the red and blue bowls for Commonwealth Games. So that's happening as well. So it's a sprint to England, really.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it, a sprint to it, because a little bit behind the eight ball with the way things sort of shaped up this year with you guys having to have sort of a later camp and selecting the team and pretty much just over a month's notice for you guys to figure out the bowls and get there and all the logistics. So I imagine that's going to be fun, but yeah. Nonetheless, congratulations to all those people picked. I'm excited to see how they end up doing over there, because it's with the slower greens, you'd say it's kind of the Canadian wheelhouse per se. We play on the slower greens most of the time, so you'd hope that Canada can put up some good results there. So pretty optimistic with the team that was picked, and I hope to see some good results.
Yeah, I'm excited. The Commonwealth Games is always super special, and not only for the returning players, but for the players going there for the first time. People may not realize it, but John Bazier, this is his debut as well. He's played internationally for Canada and won a few medals at like multi-nations and World Bowls, but this will be his first time at Commonwealth Games, and Jordan and Jen as well. So it's always a really special moment for players for their first time going. So that'll be really cool to see. And for myself, I'll be there as an assistant coach. So anybody watching, if you're in the UK, England, if you're in the area, make sure you hop down to the green, check out the bowls at Leamington Spa in Birmingham, and make sure to wave or try to get my attention and say hi, because I'd love to meet you and get to see you in person. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty jealous that you get to go and attend and just sort of watch it. As you're saying, the Canadian coach are over there, you get to go and enjoy that aspects of it. So it's going to be awesome. I'm excited for the summer. It's going to be nice to have lots of results and everything to keep talking about over the next couple months here.
Someone's got to keep Cam in line. So
exactly. He's a pretty difficult guy to deal with. So I know why you're there.
That's right.
Okay. I guess that sort of covers all of our results, lots that we had to cover there, but we do kind of have another major part of the show. We have an interview coming up. So was that all we wanted to cover there, Daryl?
Yeah, I think so. Those are all the results that we know about. Like we said, just make sure you send all those results our way, even big events, if you have them, or really cool events, if you have like really neat charitable events, or like the BQ leagues that are going really well. We love to hear about that stuff as well.
Okay. Well, in the end, if we want to transition, so we do have an interview here today. We have Jason Parkinson from the World Bowls Tour. We recorded this one about a month ago, I think, me and you. We had a good talk with Jason there. So hopefully you're going to enjoy it here. We do cover a lot of things with World Bowls Tour and sort of the development of where they're going and the events that they're running. So it's a fun interview for us. So without any further ado, here's our interview with Jason. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Canadian Bowler Podcast. I'm Mike Petulli, joined here today by Daryl Fitzgerald. And with us, we have a very special guest, Jason Parkinson. Thanks for joining us, Jason.
Very welcome. Nice to be on.
So first thing we like to do whenever we're hosting an interview with someone is essentially give you the floor, let you introduce yourself, sort of explain who you are and how you relate to the game of bowls. So the floor is yours, Jason.
Okay, so I'm Jason Parkinson, based in Manchester in the UK. Been playing bowls since I was five. I know I don't look that old, but started playing crown green. So obviously, the part of the country where I live, we have a mixture of both crown and flat green. Crown greens are on, well, they were when I was a kid, more or less on every other corner. I used to get dumped at my grandma's when I was a kid in the summer holidays. I just sit at in the back garden. Right at the very end of that was a little gate which backed onto a crown green bowl. So I used to just sit there basically and watch this game at the time that I know nothing about. Eventually, when the jacks started going in the ditch, I just used to just jump on and throw them back to stop all the old guys having to come, you know, 60, 70 yards to get the jack. So that was kind of like my first introduction. And I did that for probably 2 years. And eventually this gentleman that was there all the time just said, come on, come and have a go. You know, it was a very strict club in those days. I shouldn't even have been on the green, but he got me on and he got me into the bug, started playing. There was a big televised tournament in then days called the Flat versus Crown Challenge at this bowling green, and all the flat green superstars played in that. You know, you've got your Charlie Oldcox, Corky played in that as well. And they did in between the semi-final and the final stage, they had a spot to fill, really, and they asked me, because I knew I played there, they asked me if I'd like to do an exhibition game against the top crown green player at the time, which is a gentleman called Brian Duncan. And I think it was about 7, 8 years of age, and I actually played five ends on the TV against my idol, if you wish, at the time. And I just got the bug. 14 years of age, the first indoor flat green got built in my county, Lancashire, a big club in Blackpool, where David Holt used to be the manager from Australia now. And I started playing indoors and soon realised that was the game I wanted to concentrate on more. And I just dropped crown green completely for a few years and concentrated on my flat green. Was very lucky, managed to win the under-25 singles for England. That got me into the junior England team, progressed through to there, into the senior team. I won a couple of national titles, won the Champion of Champions, lost in two pairs. And then I was poorly for quite a while, just couldn't play at all, I had no stamina, so I gave up and then came back again and I got the passion back. I think the break away from it actually kind of like realised how much I was missing the game. PBA came along and I started playing PBAs, found it absolutely fantastic because at the time I was at that age where the traditional format, if you wish, was my age was a bit too long, really, a little bit boring. I was finding even when I was winning, I wasn't particularly enjoying it because it was just taking too long, you know. And this PBA format came along and I loved it. Nice, short, sharp. I got beat a lot of times to begin with because I was playing with against some fantastic players. But that did my game even better and I just progressed and progressed and progressed. Gave up for a few years. It was just kind of like tailoring off, if you wish. I just thought, getting a bit boring now. Nothing's changing for the better. Gave up for a while. And then I was approached by two of the board members saying, look, I've seen what you do for your county level, your Lancashire level. You run some excellent competitions. They ran well. They publicised well. The results come well. Do you fancy having a go at running the PBA as the competition secretary? So I said, well, yes. However, the proviso is you let me make a few changes. I thought, I'm going to push my luck here. We discussed what changes could be made straight away, i.e., for example, in the UK, we dropped the membership and decided we'll give an open membership, if you wish. So made it slightly cheaper. That would help the younger players as well, rather than you pay a £70 membership. Drop that straight away. That makes it a bit more inclusive for either the younger people or people that don't have as much disposable income. And then the other thing we did was have a multiple entry. So if you lost your first game, you could re-enter. But you pay again if you wish. So it's like pay as you play. So instead of paying your £70 joining fee and your entry fees, which came to almost £100 for one go, you can get a real duff draw in your very first event and be straight out. And that's your World Bowls Tour season or PBA season done. I thought, it's not really good, this. Let's change it around. So I went to some of the players and said, look, let's have a chat. You tell me, if I take over, what do I want to do? What do you not like? What do you like? Where can we go? I listen to people from all over. I travelled a lot last year and we've made some changes and our membership alone in the UK has gone up just over 50%. for what it has been pre-COVID levels, which I think in the first year is more than my imagination was expecting, hopefully 15%, 20%. But yeah, people kind of said, well, okay, we'll support you. So just give me 2 years. If I make an absolute mess of it, I make a mess of it. But they've supported me really well, really, really well. It's not just me. I just seem to be the name because I do all the traveling and things. We have a fantastic team, the PBA, and so we do at the World Bowls Tour as well. So it's there's a group of us. It's not just me. I just seem to get mentioned. So that's it, really. That's where we are today. Been on the board, being the competition director of the PBA gets me placed on the board of the World Bowls Tour. And we're going from strength to strength. But like anything in bowls, you guys see it, especially, you know, in your neck of the woods, bowlers don't like change too much as a whole. They're a bit scared if you try and change too much. Is there still place for traditional bowls, traditional formats? Yes, I do believe there is still that need for traditional stuff. But I think as a professional level, and that's what we are at the World Bowls Tour, we are a professional bowls company. We're not an amateur, which is why we have all the prize money. We have to keep trying to reinvent ourselves. It's okay having loads of events. You know, back in the days when I was playing at the Worlds, which are fabulous, and then there was about four other events. But what you think is, when you look back, you think at the time, that was great, but if we should do something similar, the format is just the same, the colours are just the same, it's just the venue changes or the name of the event, and I want to somehow just try and see how can we just play around with this, and that's where we came to the UK Open. The UK Open was a bit of a trial event. I don't like saying it was a trial event because it ended up being so successful, but I said, look, we need to move. Let's listen to people, not just the players. Let's listen to the viewers, you know, people that tune in from around the world, listen to what people have got to say, and let's look at how we can change things, which is what Stanley was. And it worked really well. Yes, we could learn certain things. You know, we put Stanley together in 7 or 8 weeks, which was tight. Which is why we had to do qualifiers a little bit all rushed. We tried the music. The whole idea of trialing that music was to, you see, we get mentioned about that all the time, about being compared to Australia all the time. So we thought, well, right. The whole idea of trialing it was just to take away what I call that dead noise in an auditorium. I hate it. I absolutely, absolutely hate it, this dead noise. So it did work. I spoke to some players and said, look, did that actually put you off? Or was that okay? And a lot of players said, didn't even notice it. And it was the first time I had the commentary box right at the side of the green as well, rather than hidden away in a room or behind a screen. It was literally right at the side of the green. And I thought, oh, this could be a bit a bit tricky as well. But again, people said they didn't really hear us, but was able to interact with the players. So that went down well. And I'm working on two other events at the moment. I've just come back today from Southampton, working on two other World Bowls Tour events. Again, and both of them will be completely different. One of them, if I can manage to pull off and get the money for, will be something we have never done before, ever. It's going to be quite, if we can get the money, it'll be quite exciting, yeah. As in the size of it. Yeah, I'm not going to say too much in case I don't get the money. But yeah, there's things going on. It's hard when it's not your job, in a way. You know, I actually teach people to drive trains as a living. So I work 50 hours, 60 hours sometimes a week. And then on top of that, I'd probably do 30 hours a week for bowls. So, yeah, it's just finding that balance of trying to make something happen with the team and keeping your eye on the game. Unless you're driving a train, it's not very good when you're asleep.
I can imagine that. So a lot to unpack there about what you've been doing over the last while. So, like you said... You as a figure show up on the WBT quite a bit, whether it's on the Facebook page doing some interviews or some stuff. You've done a lot of the commentary, or at least part of it. As the tournament director, with that title, what are your primary duties with the World Bowls Tour?
So this is where people get a little bit mistaken there. So my role, so you've got the World Bowls Tour and you've got the PBA. They're together, but they're separate as well. So the PBA side of it, my role is the competition secretary. When you come to the World Bowls Tour side of the event, so actually the events after the qualifiers, my role is the corporate side of it. So I go out and try and find the money. try and look after the sponsors, basically do that kind of stuff, which is what I've been doing this week. The tournament director for the World Bowls Toys is Tom Weir. He's been doing it quite a while now. He was the assistant tournament director when Richard was involved, and then he's now the tournament director. That's where sometimes there's a little bit confusion because they sound very, very similar. They're just different names. But yeah, for the World Bowls Toys, I just do the corporate side of it, get the money in, and try and come up with some new ideas. That sounds really easy, to get the money in. just get the money in and we work together. There's on the World Bowls Tour board, there's six people involved, so it is a team. Porkills obviously recently resigned because he's been involved with that a long time. You know, he must be due a carriage drop, I think. He's been 22, 23 years and done an excellent job. So there's a change again. When you get fresh faces, you get the fresh ideas, and that's when things keep going. It doesn't go stale. We have silent partners that get involved at meeting, and they have the likes of myself that does the travelling. It's not just me. People think it's just, make it out like it's a one man band. I couldn't do this on my own at all. There's people around me as well. Do you know what I mean?
So with all the work that you do for the association there, is it like a paid position, or is this something that you guys are strictly doing volunteer-based?
It's all voluntary.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. Lots of work. Sometimes when you see some of the comments come in, and it's like any sport, isn't it? You get some constructive comments, and we take that on board. When I'm doing the commentary, I see all these comments, and some good ones that come up, I make a little note. Some of them are just off the wall kind of thing. But I do think when you read some of the comments, I think people must think, what are these people doing for this £30,000, £50,000? They must be getting paid, you know. And it's not the case. But yeah, through criticism come new ideas, because people do sometimes have a good idea that we might have not thought of. So yeah, I'm always making notes of ideas or things that we can look at changing.
So we were kind of talking about your Facebook feed a little while ago, and there's some pictures where you have I think like tournament cards scattered across a giant table, and other things that you do. Can you tell us what it really takes to put on one of the WBT events?
Yeah, it takes a lot of work. So for example, the one I've been working on for the last 3 days down south is for something we're looking at putting on in March. So that shows how long we start planning. At the side of that, we're also in talks for the Scottish, which is November. And at the side of that, I'm also looking at something else more team-wise for end of April as well. So I'm trying to juggle three balls at the moment. It's just concentrating on targeting businesses, if you wish, in a certain area. So I find since I've been involved with this, as in at this level, doing corporate stuff only since January, and that's not my background, corporate at all. I'm very approachable. I can speak to people, but bowls is actually quite a hard game to sell. It's very, very hard game to sell because of the stigma. Yeah. You know, what can we do to change that? I don't think there's a lot we can do to change it. I mean, we've cut the format. Shot clocks come into play. You know, if it gets any shorter, it's just going to be ridiculous. It's how we make it more appealing, how we get the atmosphere in there and make it more upbeat, I think. The music, the colours, which is what we tried, something a bit different. But yeah, you're looking at, first of all, several meetings looking for money. And I'm talking, you're looking at, for each event, you're looking for roughly £50,000. It's a lot of money for bowls, you know, outside of the World Championships, which is a lot more, obviously. Then you've got to find suitable venues, make sure the players are available. It's good fun at the same time. Going around speaking to people. In an ideal world, where I'd like to get is where you get people signing deals, so 2 to 3 year deals rather than one event, two events, and then you're just starting from scratch. You know, the Co-op were a fantastic sponsor of bowls for us because they came in 2-3 year deals, and it just takes the pressure off, really. It's not like organizing an event where you've got no prize money. I could do that in my sleep. You know, I do that for the county all the time. You say, oh, there's 64 people, make this event happen. What's the prize money? Nothing. I can conjure that up in a week. But when you're looking at stands and paying a club for green space and travel costs, and you think, well, hang on, here we've got 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 before you even get the go-ahead, takes some doing.
Yeah, no, when you're watching from the side, you kind of wonder how much work actually goes into it. And exactly as you're saying, it sounds like it's definitely a process. And I can understand why you're having to put so much time into it every week, as you're saying.
Yeah, but which in a way, when you think about all that, when we knocked that together in 7 weeks, it was decided literally the final weekend of Potters, yes, we're going to run with this and we're going to have to make this happen. To get that done in 7 weeks, I don't know how something else where didn't go wrong. You're just waiting, thinking you must have missed something. We're rushing, must have missed something. But the whole team were there and it just works. Yeah, we're very lucky, very lucky.
So there's often talk about the ranking system with World Bowls Tour. So there's the top 16, and then how players get in and get out of the rankings. Is that something you could explain to us, how that ranking system works?
Yeah, so the ranking system, it's a three-year ranking system. Each event, you get allocated so many points per round. So the World Championships, let's start with that one because that's the easy one. So the World Championships, if you're a qualifier and you qualify for the World Championships, you get 5 points. And then the way it works then is each round is 10 points. So the first round, 10 points, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. That's how that works. As a qualifier, because you get 5 for joining, if you win your first round, you get an additional 5, so there's your 10. Where if you're already in, say, as a top 16, you get 10. So they're not. There's no benefit there from them, because people sometimes say, oh, it's a close shot, you get the extra point. They don't. It's just a myth or a misunderstanding, should we say. There's still the 10 points for qualify. It's just distributed differently. So they get 10 in one go, you get 5 and an additional 5. So then just 10, 10, 10, 10. For events like Scottish and Stanley, the same thing for the first round, 10 or 5 and 5. And then it goes 5, 5, 10, 10 points. So that's what anything other than the World Championships, that's how that works. You keep your points, and obviously at the end of 3 years, when that ranking list is then produced for the start of the next year, it's produced, but you get minus the points from 3 years ago. That's where people forget. So, for example, I think Stuart Anderson is 2 at the moment, I think, as it's just closed. So I think he's ranked 2. At the start of the next ranking season, which will be for the Scottish, which will be November, so his points will be 2 minus the points he got 3 years ago. Unfortunately for Stuart, 3 years ago, he had a very good year. I think he won the singles at Potters, and I think he won the Scottish singles. So there's 90 points to come off there. That's a lot of points. So although he finishes at 2, I think he starts at 9, something like that. I can sometimes half understand the argument, close shot, but the top 16 have earned the right to be there. They play bowls, you know, at that level, consistently, that's the difference. And we always get the comment about when we go to Potters about the portable rink. Yes, of course, they know the rink slightly better than a qualifier because of the consistency that we've just spoke about over the years. And then people say, well, I'd like to see him on a normal green, which is when we went to Stanley, we used the Stanley green, which is probably one of the best greens in this country. So flat. It's not perfect, but it's probably one of the best you'll get. And the top 16 proved the point. I know a few of them had a few rocky first rounds, but the same people were getting to the same places. And again, it's the consistency. Simon Skelton, who had been in the top 16, dropped out, come back in again. It's not impossible. When people say it's close, it's not impossible. It's just that they're playing consistent all the time, or the majority of the time. And it only takes, you know, if we run another event as a qualifier, if you come in as a qualifier, you pay in this country, you pay your £25, you enter your qualifying event, you come to the next event, you win your 5 rounds, and you could get your points. And if you got your points for, say, Scotland, that could probably nearly put you 13, top 13 straight away, depending on what other points come off. So it's not a closed shop. You've just got to play well, play consistently well. The thing, I think the big thing, the big beef is we have looked before at changing a ranking list, but until we get consistently more events, there's no point in changing the ranking list for 1 or 2 events. It's pointless. But the more, if I can get us the Worlds and say 4 more, that's the time you can look at, you know, you can look at changing a ranking list. So, yeah, I don't agree with the closed shop model. I can understand it, but I don't agree with it.
That's a good explanation. I think it'll give some of our viewers an idea of exactly how the point system works. Sometimes it's just a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah, and I agree. And that's where we can be better, I think, as an organization. So again, a couple of volunteers, we've just got fingers in pies everywhere. What we're looking at the moment is, well, we have a PBA website and we have a World Bowl Tour website. We're actually in the process of merging them and creating just one website. And that's very high up on the agenda, what to do. Ranking list, full explanation. PBA ranking list goes like this. World Bowl Tour ranking list goes like this. So yeah, that's possibly some of our fault as well, because it's not, it is there somewhere, but it's hard to find. You know, when I try and find it even myself sometimes, you think, God, I've been lost in this website for a week. You know, where am I? But yeah, when we get the new one up, people will be able to see that and hopefully understand a little bit better. We look at other sports, snooker, darts, but because they have like a lot of points and they have a lot of prize money as well. But if we did that for bowls with prize money, 30p, 70p,
So for those in the top 16, what benefit, we hear the top 16 all the time, we see the rankings, and people always talk about, you know, 16 is that magic number. But the top 16, what are the benefits that they get for being in the top 16?
Benefits? Nothing. I don't see there's a benefit. The way it's done is, yes, they don't play each other first round, let's say. So I suppose you could call that a benefit. So they're drawn into positions, and then the qualifiers are just randomly drawn in as well. Right. So, yeah, they don't play the same people all the time, which is why this year I've said to people, when we do a draw, we try and make it transparent. I quite like the way we did the... You draw it for the first round, because you need that to happen to organise an event. And then after that, we're doing this ball out of the hat. And it just added that little bit of mystery and that little bit of fun as well. So you could get 1B2 and things like that. I think where sometimes people don't understand, for TV, it needs to be a certain way as well, because when you're trying to sell something to, say, BBC or something, you do want your top 16 players in positions to create it interesting. Outside of things, streaming events and that, that's where we have the luxury, if you wish, of trying other models.
So if someone was trying to make their way into the World Bowl Tour, maybe get on there someday, what would you sort of recommend to someone coming up in the ranks to sort of get themselves onto the World Bowls Tour?
So, you've got to, I think it's the best chance you've got now, because now you can re-enter. So in the UK, we have at the moment eight venues already booked for start of September. As soon as we get the go-ahead for Scotland, I'll have to book a few more. But some are double-booked because one thing that annoys me with bowls is there's so many date clashes. The calendar is so packed. You get to a point where you just can't not stand on people's toes. I try and do where I can or possible to avoid clashes, because it doesn't benefit anybody. Won't benefit us, won't benefit the other organisation, and it certainly doesn't benefit the player. I think at sometimes, yeah, you've just got to take your chance. But for £25, just keep trying. You know, if you've got that commitment and you're willing to travel around, then go for it. It's the best chance you've got nowadays, rather than just once a year you get your chance and you're done. You've got probably six chances to qualify in an event now.
So you talked about the UK Open, and you've got some other things kind of on the go, looking to expand, which sounds really awesome for the World Bowls Tour. Now, aside from obviously the money, which is, as we all know, for anybody that's run anything in bowls, is really hard to come by, is the schedule of bowls, which I know in the Northern Hemisphere, like Canada and the UK, you know, you've got a start and an end to the outdoor, you got kind of a start and an end to the indoor, and it's compact. How hard is it to try to fit your events into that calendar?
Very hard. Very, very hard. Which is why the Stanley one fell in between the English national finals. So we just couldn't avoid it. There was no way we could avoid clashing with something. So we put it in what was probably the best possible place. It fell within part of the national singles, but what we said to people, if you are in the national singles final, I will guarantee you the third date out of the qualifying date, which is the day after, and we just did it that way. I've already spoken to the IBA this morning, and I've already got their calendar already, so I know exactly when I can plan these two events. It's not where I particularly wanted it, but it fits. So that's quite good as well. And I think, I don't know, I think sometimes I have too many organisations, not quite sure. I think that's where people get a bit kind of like confused as well, for like when I speak to some of the overseas players that come across, you know, having a drink at the bar or something like that. They seem to think we are Bowls England. So they think Bowls England, they run the whole Bowls in the England. But we don't. That's the outside. Then we have the EIBA, which is the inside. We have the Federation. You know, we have the Crown Green. So there's a lot of different calendars to dodge. And it's getting harder and harder. And it gets to a point where sometimes people need to choose. It's going to get to a point where people need to choose. But that's my job, to try and just avoid where I can, which is why sometimes when we have these events, we go midweek. But then you've got to make sure that the prize money is such, people taking time off work, they're not hit too much.
Right.
But that automatically bumps your prize pot up straight away.
So, in your mind, what does the World Bowls Tour mean in the UK?
Well, like I say, it's the only, for the UK, it's the only professional organisation there is. We're our own governing body, so selfishly, it makes it easier. You take away all the day clashes and things like that, it makes it easier for us to do what we want, because we don't have to go to a governing body. We can change things when we want to change things. We hold regular board meetings and look at how we change things. The shot box wobbed for the last few meetings. When the shot box was introduced at the time, some of the players on the tour were, you know, slow. It's fair. They were not slow as in trying to put people off. It was just their natural style. They were naturally slow, and it was just taking too long. So the shot clock was introduced, and at the time served its purpose. When you look at the players now, 16, never bat an eyelid. But even the qualifiers that come through, they're just naturally quick players. They know, there's like snooker, isn't it? You're always thinking shot ahead, shot ahead, shot ahead, unless something changes. So there's a conversation going on. Does it serve any purpose? Do we think by having a shot clock, are we missing, or as it just, are the TV audience missing a really good bowl where someone might have just rushed a bowl rather than thought, well, I've had an extra 3 seconds, I've played a better bowl, or, you know, there's all those kinds of things. So, yeah, but if you had to go to an organisation to discuss that, that could take weeks, but we could change that overnight. You know, that's the luxury of having your own organisation. But I think if we get it right, I want to make it into a tour. You know, it is a World Bowls Tour. People said, oh, can we run events abroad? I'd like to see that. I would like to see events abroad. We have done an event abroad, Cyprus, I think it was. It's just logistics again, getting money. I actually spoke to somebody in Japan, funny enough, because they're like the betting, don't they? They're like the betting on the bowls. I've approached a few betting people in this country lately. The hardest thing for me is getting a contact. So people come to me all the time saying, just watch the snooker, and Cinch are sponsoring everything, and Kazoo and Ryanair, you know, people like that. But, and I email them, find the good, go on the website, find some email addresses, send a corporate package off, blah, 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 blah. You never hear anything back. And you think, is it being ignored? Is it going into some random junk file somewhere? It's just getting that foot in, if you wish. One of the companies I just spoke to down south there was quite high up in Honda cars. That would be a contact I would never been able to have got if it wasn't through a friend. It's just getting the contacts, and getting to know people like that opens doors. And that's the key thing for me, to find out how I open doors. It's frustrating.
I can understand that. I mean, for Mike and myself, we love watching the World Bowls Tour, and we're lucky that you guys put stuff on Facebook and YouTube that we can access and take in live, especially, which is huge, not just after the fact. What has, your involvement in putting stuff on Facebook and YouTube and having that live streaming and the BBC as well, what has that meant to the WBT?
The streaming has been coming on, you know, a long, long way. BBC have been a big fan of Bowls for a long time. You know, the viewing figures do well, which is why they always come back and support the World Championships. So, for example, this last World Singles Final, we had 1.4 million people watching on the BBC the final. At the same time as that, for those that are not at home or whizzing around or at work, and quickly, the beauty of the stream, isn't it? You don't have to be at home to watch it. You can tap in, tap out. You can watch it on a train if you're travelling. And the figures we have there were like, between the YouTube and the Facebook, I think it was either 780,000 or 790,000 views with a 2 million reach on YouTube. It's just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But that comes down to, as well, we're fortunate that we found a good streaming company called Optical Media who are just fantastic. The quality that they give us is great. It really is great. You know, the camera quality, bearing in mind there's nobody sat behind the cameras, all robotic cameras controlled by the two producers in the clouds, as I call them, because they're always in the corner. And they just do, you know, so well for us. But again, it just adds the price. But you'd rather pay a little bit extra to get good. You don't start pushing out a load of rubbish. I know sometimes every now and again I'll run around with my mobile phone, but that's just to show Bowls. You know, I remember, I think it was actually Eric's, when I was down there, he played his first game on the Bowlers Bar, and he said, I've got loads of people in Canada want to tune in. So I said, well, I'll do it for you. I'll do it on my mobile phone. And people are going, can you keep your hand still? He said, I hope you're not doing the BBC. You're like, I'm on a mobile phone. I hope you're not doing the BBC. Yeah, and it was just so people could see those events. We are changing the schedule, because that's another thing we're looking into as well. The prelims, if you wish, were played on the Bowlers Bar. Not ideal, because if you qualify from a country, you're travelling thousands of miles away, you want to play on the famous rink. So we're just in the midst of juggling how we make that happen. So none of those games will be on that Bowlers Bar. They'll all be on the portable rink. This year, we'll probably make it happen, but this year's difficult because the standardised week we use is very close to New Year's Eve this year. I think it's something like the third or fourth where we've got to start setting up, which makes it slightly harder, getting everything transported across. And then we normally build it within 2 to 3 days. I think someone actually did a quick speed-up video of how it's laid. It's quite clever. It's like a big jigsaw, really. I just arrived after that.
So you did sort of touch on it. People come from across the world, really, to play in World Bowls Tours events. Canada, we have a branch here where you've obviously met some of the players who've came over and played over the years. The one question we were wondering about is it sort of a bit of a barrier for growing the World Bowls Tour across the world, just because a lot of people come in, they qualify maybe for that one game and they end up losing out. Do you think that's a barrier for potentially growing the game, maybe not having as much participation in those countries where they do have to qualify?
Yeah, people always say, you know, the overseas travel a long, long way and then seem to struggle. Some do, some don't. And I think it depends on where you're from. It's just unfortunate, in a way. Some of the countries don't have the indoor facility. And when you come over, you're all qualifying on an outdoor green, or you've only got outdoor greens, even if they're a decent pace, they're never like the pace of the portable rink. You know, it's so fast. It really, really is rapid. So they're on a bit of a back foot, if you wish. I think Eric did quite well because he decided he would come over quite early with his father and get a little bit more indoor experience. I think he used Acle, which is where Tim Stone plays. And that served him well because he played well. He was a bit unlucky, really. He played very, very well. But it's just such an alien rink. You know, we say it all the time. You always say that. You get sucked into playing the wrong shot on that rink. Because a good player, you think, I can just reach into that. You may as well send it wrong bias. You know what I mean? You've just got to know. Either draw. If you can't draw it, you're in trouble. You just hit it. Keep it simple. Just hit it. Don't start trying to be clever or think, this is the shot. 9 times out of 10, that probably is the shot. Not on that ring. You've got to change the whole way. And that catches a lot of people out. Even people that have come for the second time thinking, why are you still trying to play 2 yard over, you know, at the head? Just hit it. So they are on a back foot, but how do we make that fairer, if you want to call it, or how do we help, you know, you guys as an overseas branch I don't know. Do you slow the portable rink down? Do you not use a portable rink? Don't know. I know I have my own opinions. I would like to see it personally heavier. Because I think in my era of watching bowls when I was a kid, David Bryant, for example, when you used to watch David Bryant, it was just a display of what bowls is. Fantastic draw bowls, trail on the jack, rest into the part, you know, 2 yard, 3 yard, 4 yard. He still had the drive, but it was just showing the whole game, the whole four or five basic shots of bowls, if you wish. I think where this kind of loses that, that's my personal opinion. If you slacken it off and make it slightly heavier, would that allow you to play that? Or is it just something within the board? We don't know why it does that. It just does it. So it's laser leveled and put down the same all the time. We pick it up, move it somewhere else, put it down, and the same hand does the same thing. It's bizarre, isn't it? Because you think, oh, you know, you play down towards the commentary box, the forehand sticks out a little bit if you play a bit of pace. You take it to Scotland, relay it somewhere else, forehand towards the box, sticks out a bit of pace. We don't know. It must be something to do with the wood. I'm not sure.
Interesting. Got a kind of a question that mixes the social with the growth in overseas kind of stuff. That that viral video of Nick Brett that kind of exploded everywhere. What did that do for you guys as far as maybe your viewership or just the interest in what you're doing over there?
So I think any publicity for bowls is great. You know, I think what made that a bit special was, is the I think the relationship Nick and Greg have. They've been playing together a long, long time. It's not just a pair that gets put together for the Worlds. They were a pair that have been playing a long time. Nick has this very dry sense of humour. Is you know, that's the, to me, that's what the ball, what bowls needs, bit more of the personality in the game, which I think sometimes the shot clock also destroys because you're so conscious on the time. But Nick just has this natural ability to have this flair the way he plays, and it was just a whole situation, I thought, of the, yes, it was a great shot. Was it the best ball someone's ever played? Nick will probably say, I think he actually did say, I think probably not. You could probably get balls equally as good, but I think it's just the occasion. Was it Potter's? Was it the people they were playing against, the absolute superstars, the crowd, Corkill's commentary? It just seemed to all come together at the right time. And then there's a DJ, wasn't it, a rapper, I think it was, then reenacted that, but he superimposed his head on. And we were like, we were tweeting him just to see if we could actually get him to come down and play. You know, just see, looks at me marvellous, but like I say, it's just very, very difficult getting. It'd be great if he come back to us and said, yeah, you know, I'll have an exhibition game, like, that's what we need. We need to just bring people into the sport. But yeah, it was great. Don't tell him I said that, though. His head's bigger than it is.
Yeah, we caught that. Jay Khaled did that superimposing of his head on the shot, and we thought it was a pretty awesome little video, or in how he tweeted it, I guess, and then it did get more views after that point, too.
It just shows, doesn't it, something as simple as that, something as simple as a good shot at the right occasion has that reach. Yeah. That's how we need to somehow just keep delivering that, and that's not easy to do. Yes, we see loads of good bowls like that throughout the World Championships, loads of them. It was just the whole thing came together at the right time.
So that sort of links to one of the topics we wanted to go after. So we love the World Bowls Tour, and we've been a little critical of it over time. But one of the things we saw this year was the changing of the dress code, which was a breath of fresh air, allowing the different colors. Is there any sort of changes that are being discussed or any new avenues, anything new that sort of the World Bowls Tour is planning in the near future?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, that. I think for the... I like what we did at the UK Open. So because it was all rushed and on a bit more of a budget, if you wish, rather than having to buy a load of shirts and, you know, get more stickers produced and things like that, we said, well, okay, let's allow for this event, let's allow the player to have a personality or a brand. We have so many good characters in the UK, and with all the new shirts coming, and a lot of our teams are going from a club name to a team name, so going like Vipers and stuff like that, and that comes with a brand. And I always thought, well, if you're a player, you're known at the level just slightly underneath the World Bowl Tour, even at international level, you just not managed to get into a TV event, and you do very well, and you're known for your brand, and you win a qualifier using your brand, and then all of a sudden you get the brand taken off you. There's a different set of bowls. There's a bit of a green. It's to think, well, and you only ever do it, that's the one and only time you ever qualify. You think, it's a bit of a shame, that, really. But the flip side of that is, I think, for the Worlds, there just needs to be that little bit more of a professional look. Yes, I know swapping a trousers to black, it's not a massive change at all, you know, a massive change. But I actually think it worked, and a small change actually had a better impact than just going a bit scruffy. Because there's a fine line, isn't there, between trendy but still professional to someone just being scruffy. And when you're on the BBC primetime, you don't really want that. That's the way I think. Is there scope for more change in a professional look? Yeah, I think so. Would we ever go back to playing own coloured bowls but using the stickers? Not quite sure. We tried it, and our worst nightmare appeared in the final, where both players had the same colour bowls. They both had green bowls, and I just thought, no. Because Jamie had actually played, I think, the first two or three games with his red Tigers, and then in the semi-final he swapped to green. And I just thought, but people say, I can't believe they're playing with the same colour. I thought you'd done away with that. But how unfair would it have been for me to go to one of those players and say, really sorry, you know, I know, Mark, you played four games with these bowls, but because they're both green, you're going to have to change your bowls. A bit of an issue with that one. It's like Ronnie O'Sullivan coming in with a snooker cue. You take a snooker cue off him and you give him a broom.
It's been interesting, and I think Mike and I have discussed it, where when the World Bowls Tour came in, and they were brand new everything, you know, you had the two colored bowls, the shot clock, the blue carpet, all that stuff. And we're seeing some of those things that have been around with you guys for a while now creep into the Commonwealth Games, let's say, where they're now saying, for TV purposes, for marketing, for people seeing it, we're going to use blue and red bowls and split it off. So it's really cool to see the innovations that you guys have on that side move over. And I think Mike and I really... It's what you said, the personality, the fun and the atmosphere. If that picked up, it would be probably just another level of watching that event. Bowls are great. I mean, they're always going to be great. The players are awesome. But I think you're on the right path with that. That sounds really, really good.
I think with the Commonwealth Games, I don't know the exact reason. I am involved with Commonwealth Games this year. I'm just being the venue announcer, so that's my dulcet tones doing all the announcing. But I think, so if you come to the World Championships or the UK Open or whatever event we run, 95% of them people are bowlers. So whether they play with different colours, they know to identify by the colour sticker. Our stickers are very big, you know, really, really big stickers to help with that visual aid. When you go to Commonwealth Games, you've got people obviously going to be bowlers, but you're going to have a very high percentage of people as well that are bidded for tickets for baseball or whatever sports in there. You don't get your first choice. And so, well, there's loads of tickets left for bowls, whatever. And people just turn up saying, oh, well, I asked for table tennis, I've ended up with bowls. And that'd be a lot easier for them if you've got an old team playing with blue and an old team. You could work that out, can't you? And from a high stand distance, you can work a colour of a bowl out a lot easier. I'm just wondering whether that has played a part as well. That kind of educational side, so people thinking, actually, what's actually going on here? That's what we need to, as someone that's doing the announcing in the venue, is how we do when the games are not on, how we educate those viewers that have come for a sport that they didn't particularly want to come and see. But by doing that education, so you know, half an hour before, chat to them, hi everybody, this is what you're going to see. You know, in bowls, you've got four or five main shots, and this is what they're all about. That will help. And even if off the back of that, if you got just 10% of those thousands of people all of a sudden saying, oh, I'm going to give this game a go, and they go back to wherever they're from in the world and actually try and actively find a bowling green, that's a win as well, because this sport really does need more people playing.
So moving away from the World Bowls tour, you do, I guess you wear other hats or you do other work outside of the World Bowls tour. So from what I was sort of reading online there, it sounds like you organize or run a Super League in your county. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the Super League, I had it in my mind. It was like one of these mad ideas I had in my mind for quite a while. And COVID helped me kick that off. So when we were slightly coming out of this, we didn't, there was no nationals going to be played at all. I come from a very small county. We've only got 3 outdoor clubs. And, you know, we've probably got 250 members in the whole of the county. And I thought, if I don't do something as the competition secretary, these people are going to be isolated, some on their own for a lengthy period of time, where a lot of people were suffering from mental health. I thought, well, I can easily knock this together. Easy. If I put, something out saying, I know you've not got time, don't go rushing around looking for a team. So I said, you enter yourself. So you enter yourself individually. It's £5 entry per person. And then I do a Super League draw. So I got 82 names, I think, the very first year. And the way I worked it out was, I put players that I thought were top players into an A pot. I put lady players into a D pot. And those in between, I put the better half of the more average players in B. And those that were a bit newer in C. So each team had 4 players, which consisted of an A pot, a B pot, a C pot, and a D pot. And that became their thing. Played sets format. To play 2 different games on a day and points. And what the good thing was that, because it got people playing with better people, you got people to meet new people, and it got people to play against the likes of, you know, ex-internationals like myself and Mark, you know, people like Mark and people like that. You think, well, and I can do that very easy. And what I loved about it was in the teams that came first and second were 2 totally deaf bowlers that play in the deaf team there, that would never, ever normally mix with the likes of 18 players, would just get on with their own game. And it was fantastic to see people like that win and come second. And I had, just for a league, I had about £2,000 as a prize pot, wow. Which is a lot for a random league game. And it was great. Some of the comments I got said, thank you very much for giving us that opportunity. And that's what it was. It was just basically an idea. And the prime thing was just to get people out of the house, not scared anymore, and not suffering from mental health issues.
That's amazing. I mean, I've seen some of the tweets come out and some posts come out that really sing your praises as far as your involvement in bowls, whether it's WBT, your county, doing a lot of hard yards, going around trying to get money in on top of obviously your day job and everything else you do. I really want to thank you for coming on and talking about the WBT, giving some information to the viewers that may not have any idea what goes on behind the scenes and how things shake out. So, Jason, just thank you so much.
No, thank you guys really as well. You know, it's through podcasts like yourself, and we have one over here that allows people like myself to come on and have a bit of a voice. I think people sometimes think they message us and we just ignore them. When that's not the case, you know, we do pick up messages and get back to it. Might not be straight away, but we do get back to people, and we are trying to be a little bit more transparent. We're not perfect. We can't be perfect. You know, we are learning, but we're getting there. I'm quite confident, and hopefully within the next kind of 4 weeks, I'll have some interesting news for you. Hopefully.
Well, so do you have any other questions before we call it here, Daryl?
No, this is
nope.
This has been great.
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work, guys.
Yeah, thanks again for joining us.
Anytime, been my pleasure.
And we are back. That was a fun interview there. Hope you all enjoyed our interview with Jason. It was fun talking with him. How'd you enjoy that one, Daryl?
I really enjoyed that. The WBT has always been a little bit of a mystery. I mean, we see it on TV. You get the comments from people that maybe know or maybe don't know and think they know. And you always wonder, you know, what it takes to run it, who's doing what, the money. I think he made the mention of, like, you know, if we don't get $50,000 in, we won't run that event. If we did that in any competition in Canada, we'd be running the biggest probably event that we have. if we had that money, we're happy to run stuff and give out, you know, $100 top prizes. So it's quite quite an organization, and you can see just why they're successful in what they do.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed getting the background information on a sort of like the setting up of the big rink at the Potters, and then, as you're saying, sort of how they're getting the sourcing for the different sponsorships and funding, everything like that. So it's cool to see the, I guess, sort of the bigger scale, what things could potentially maybe move to if development in Canada sort of moves along, if we can maybe bring the sport along and sort of a phoenix, as you're saying, like $1,000, maybe push that $1,000 up in the next few years if we keep getting more and more entries into that, and maybe little smaller phoenix tournaments across Canada type thing. So it's encouraging to see stuff like that.
Yeah, and my comment about all that is, I think that's one of the things that we're really missing in Canada. I mean, I know obviously traveling around the UK or some of the smaller countries is vastly different to Canada, right? You can't just drive to BC when you feel like it, or over to Nova Scotia if you feel like it. But I think if we really want something to really kick off, it would be nice to have something that's coast to coast. We have the Nationals, which is great. We have all the stuff under BCB, but to have that really big prize festival type event where you qualify in BC, Saskatchewan, Alberta, wherever it is, you get the money to go, and then you have a chance to win an even bigger prize pool. That would be something that would be really, really cool if it ever happened.
Yeah, I really hope it's something that develops over time. And I see probably something, as I said, Phoenix being that avenue where if a couple other provinces, a couple different regions maybe put something together, it's something we could maybe work towards being World Bowls tour sized someday, or potentially even developing, I guess, the PBA within Canada to sort of get more people there, sort of the more financial backing behind the players that do end up going across to play in that.
Yeah.
All right, so is that a cover today, Daryl?
I think so.
Okay. Well, another happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And another reminder to like, comment, subscribe. So any sort of interactions on the videos here, we helps us become the cream of the crop, as Daryl is trying to reference with his shirt, I'm sure. But yeah, we are on major podcast platforms, should be there within the day. So if you aren't able to check us out, please check us out after the fact. And with that, may all your bowls be touchers.